So I will talk about some model of string which we are developing for a long time. So this is a plan of my talk. There is a number of publications which are mentioned here. One is 93, which is the first where we developed somehow the ideas, and then my talk will be mainly based on the last article where we succeeded to formulate the continuous model in the continuum. Now, the background of this, this alternative string or whatever is based on the following observation, that we have the following situation, that in strong interaction, we have in deep inelastic, we have the partons, and QCD perfectly describe this picture. We're still missing the low energy limit of QCD to describe the hadrons. And from other side, we have the string theory, which describe the in the spectrum, it has Regge trajectories and sort of hadrons, you can say, but the missing part is that it is very difficult in terms of string theory to describe deep inelastic scattering or to see the partons. Now, there is a...
Why?
There is a many... that's a good question. So I will just mention a couple of them, why it is so. I just give, it's just to give you idea what is going on. The thing is that if you consider, first of all, that you cannot consider the particles off shell, because the string amplitude always defined for specific values of k square. Yes. So the thing is that if you consider, let's say, scattering of two tachyons or two gravitons, and the amplitudes usually decay exponentially instead of power fall. There was an idea also in 88 when you introduce here the d-instanton and integrate over the moduli space of the d-instanton, and then Michael Green, he got this power behavior, but still the theory is in 10 dimensions. So there is the obstacles is that the string theory is in 10 dimension. There is a, you cannot go off shell, k square is very specific values. You have massless particles like graviton and photons. Now the last development is was last Monday was a talk of Joe Polchinski, who explained that there is this field string dualities where the ideal thin string, which is in the bulk, is dual to the boundary theory, and somehow there is a beautiful explanation why, how the string in four dimensional appear as a superposition of the string in the bulk of different thickness. Now I will advocate a different different point, which I say that we started in 1903 with the purpose to find some. Just to start from the scratch to find maybe the string theory which might be useful for QCD. The idea is very simple and is the following, that we have well-defined path integrals when we have the point particle moving from x to y, and we have to sum over overall trajectories with action which is actually measure the length of the path. Now if the particle have internal structure which somehow the world sheet, the world trajectory become a world sheet, then the path integral should be extended to the integral over the surfaces. Now, the first claim which we want to do is the following. We want to measure the surfaces also in terms of centimeters, which means that if we will succeed to do that, then if the surface will degenerate into the path, these two path integral will be very close to each other. So the question is it possible to do something to measure surfaces in terms of centimeters? In the beginning, we have found a discrete realization of this idea, which is very similar to the Regge calculus, and is as following. So if we discretize the path with this type of segments, then the action is just the sum of these lengths, and you integrate over this over the vertices. In case of surface, you can see this this expression where you just have to take the length of the edge and multiply by the pi minus alpha ij, where is alpha ij is the dihedral angle between the two faces. This is a sort of deficit angle, so you multiply the length by the deficit angle, and you can imagine that, let's say, if this is a flat surface, so it's just artificial line here, alpha will be equal to pi, and therefore pi minus pi, the length will be q. So only where you have bending, there is a contribution to this term. Yeah, it depends somehow. You can imagine that if you can compute it very easily, if you see that if you stretch this surface to the line, that will produce just the length, the total length. The angles will be summed, and then
not the area.
Yes, that's exactly what I want. I don't want to have at all the area term. So let's see what is the continuous. Yes. Yes. Of course, sure.
But this way, you're losing your initial point that your object has a structure, right? The structure matters in some terms, okay? It was well fed. Now you say the only thing which matters is the length in one direction.
No, not in one direction, in all directions. I compute that you should sum the lengths of all edges. You sum all of them. Yes.
They can wiggle, but it still it looks like a path, not like a surface. Okay.
No. Okay. So let's take a continuous surface. I can explain also in terms of continuous surface. If we take this type of terms, we take the mass. The coupling constant has dimension of mass. And we just integrate the extrinsic curvature over the area. As you see, extrinsic curvature is 1 over R1 plus our R2. So the area is measured in centimeters square. R1 plus R2, this is 1 over centimeter. So the integral, it have dimension, it's surface integral, but have dimension length. So the claim is that this is actually the what I write before is just exactly the discrete version of this. It is very similar to the Einstein gravity, where you have R integrated over the volume. Now the dimension is centimeter square, so one can say that the action is measuring not the volume of the universe but the area of the universe. And if you know that in Regge gravity you have the area of the space multiplied by the deficit angle. So here is very similar. Area is changed by the length of the edge and the deficit angle by this thing. So this is very important that it make a functional really real invariant. Now you can see here, I just show you why if the surface degenerate in the line, it becomes just MDL. The reason is very simple. So one of the curvatures here is infinite, another one is 1 over r, so I write it here. The area is equal to 2 pi r multiplied by the length, and you see that these r's are canceling each other, and it's become proportional to the length of the line. At the same time, it has a rigidity. The reason is that if you make this type of turn, there will be some additional contribution which which will produce, it will depend on this angle. So it's first, it has different type of property. First of all, it measures the surface in terms of centimeters. And other side, it also knows about the bending.
For a flat surface, it's just zero.
For what?
For a flat surface.
For flat surface, that's good. Good question. Let's see what it is. I will show you in a moment. The curvature will be concentrated on the edge. So it will be perimeter of the flat surface. So the I don't know why, but it take years to write it in D dimension. I cannot explain this. But so and actually the construction was very simple. So if you embed the surface into the D dimension, then you have actually D minus two normals. And you have this tangent vectors. The induced metric is written here. And the second fundamental form is just the second derivative of the x multiplied by the normal. So if we have in three dimension only one normal exists, so there is only one quadratic form. But if you are in higher dimension, there is just many of them. And depending on how you, if you cut with a plane which passing the normal, you will have many many curvatures like this, and this I exactly numerate this type of curvatures. Now you can build the scalar just summing over the I, which is this type of sum. And then to produce the action which we are interested, which will be the length, you should take the square root of this expression. And definitely if d is equal to 3, you just take the square root and it's reproduce the functional which we have before. But actually it will looks like this. This is an invariant form of describing this functional. The people who knows, who listened to Polyakov talk in 84, they remember that he was adding to the area term some curvature term which don't have this root. So the only difference is that if you don't put the root, then this expression have 1 over r square and integrate it over the area, it's an angle. It's some very funny angle. The coupling constant here is dimensionless. And therefore, somehow you move to different theories. So it happens that, you know, the simple things, what happens is just you take the square root and you put the m. And the statement is that if the surface degenerates into the line, it just reduces to the usual the integral which we know, just the length of the world path.
You introduce new dimensional constant into your
series. Yeah, m. So I need one, which is just a mass.
That's exactly what Polyakov didn't want to do, right?
Yes. And the reason was that he want scale invariant theory. And if you check without taking the root, you will see that the theory is scale invariant. But it is not Weyl invariant. And now, this was a really surprise, which I never expect. So what happens that this theory is conformal invariant? That was absolutely unbelievable. I just make a calculation, and I did not realize at the first time that rho disappeared. And only after, you know, after calculation was done, I realized that there was no rho in the calculation. So the you can see it very easily. So the k square, this invariant, can be rederived, just simple mathematics. You just rederive, and you will get here the Laplace of Laplace built on the induced metric multiplied by the x mu in square. So this is just equivalent representation of the same things, where the Laplace operator is have just usual form. So as usually, you can take always on the surface the conformal gauge. Now you can count the scale factor. So from square root of g's, you have a rho square here. From this term, you have here they cancel each other, but from here you have 1 over a rho in square. So you see that these factors cancel each other and there is no rho dependence in the action.
This is really trivial statement because you have a dimensional constant coming from, you have dl and action must be dimensionless. So it's exactly just you expect from the very beginning, rho must not be there.
Yeah.
You mean the conformal weight has to be.
Yeah.
But it has an engineering dimension, right?
It's like, you know.
But he's talking about classical level at the moment. No, he does not discuss quantum.
This is also local rescaling. I mean, your argument about dimensions would be for constant rescaling.
But he can prove that on the quantum level it's going to be the same.
No. I don't discount quantum. We will go to that later. But I want to say that the theory is conformal in one, which is unexpectable because you have dimensional couplings behind, I mean, why it should be. Of course, for normal string, I mean, with air reaction, it is also.
If you started with the normal string with the area action,
yes,
and considered degenerating to a thin tube,
yes,
you would get an action which is proportional to the length. Your m would be sort of tension divided by 2 pi r, where
yes,
r is.
Yes, that's.
But then you wouldn't have your bending term. Is that right?
So the yes, thing, yes. So
the
if you
is the bending term.
No. If you take the area, you will have the things that you will have the. As you explained, the R times L. So your action is R times L, right?
Yeah.
The size, I mean, if you have this tube.
Yeah.
The thing is that if R goes to zero, then this goes to zero, and the amplitude of the thin spike is minus zero, which is one. So therefore, actually, if you discretize the model with area term, it produces this type of well-known spikes. So actually in 93, the idea was that we have to have something, a rigidity or something which will measure the length of the spikes. Therefore, if you compute, let's say, the action for our airs, then you will have a lot of contribution from hairs, and therefore it is very suppressed, you know, to produce this type of fluctuations. So but not the area term. So that's actually was the first initial step to produce to introduce this action. But then,
sorry, I just going back transparency. I thought initially you were taking the extrinsic curvature and integrating it with the induced metric on your surface. And now, so is this G the induced metric, or is this some auxiliary sort of extra metric on the
That's That's good. So it is induced metric, actually.
It is the induced
metric. You can consider, like in Polyakov case, you can consider, I will say that finally I will integrate over the X and over the G. So I will you can consider the X and J coordinates are independent.
Okay, because I mean, ordinarily we think of two different ways of formulating the string.
String
theory,
right? Yes. That's true.
And then there's the sort of Polyakov formulation where you do have an extra two-dimensional metric.
What is here amazing is that you don't need to rederive anything. You just consider, either you consider the initial model, if you write it in this way, it looks like as it's written here. So where G is induced metric, that's thing. So, but you can consider also the situation where the metric is independent, and X is also independent coordinates. So there is two ways of looking on that without changing anything, just considering the same.
If it's independent, then you have an extra constraint when you vary the metric.
Yes, that's what we'll do the little bit later. Now, the equation of motions, what is amazing is just the curvature, the intrinsic curvature is equal to zero.
That's a Ricci tensor?
Yes, I mean, if you consider the in three dimension, right, So the equation will be the Gaussian curvature is equal to zero. That's the known fact. If you take the action, which is the first quadratic form, and you variate, the equation will be that the Gaussian curvature is equal to zero. So despite the fact that the action is extrinsic, the equation is just intrinsic. So which means that either R1 is zero or R2 is zero, which means that the surfaces are built from the motion of the line, because
somehow. R1 equals zero or infinity.
It's flat. So it's a flat
two-dimensional. Yeah, it's sort of flat, but if it is in three dimension, it's much more easier surfaces. But if you go to higher dimension, then they become more complicated, but still are built by the line, the motion of the line.
So
you
can do many.
I have too many zeros.
No.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I just make a mistake. So one of them is if it is one of them is infinite, then you saturate the equation. But just to give you the flavor of this. Now we come to your question about the flat surface. So let's consider the Wilson loop. The surface is have the size r and is at t in the length. So if it is flat, then the only contribution comes from this edge. The curvature is concentrated on the boundary. And the action is equal just actually r plus t multiplied by m. So it's just a perimeter of the Wilson loop. And then you know very well that if the action is the perimeter, then the potential is just equal to constant. And therefore, the string tension is equal to zero, which automatically means that in this theory, initially, classically, the string tension is equal to zero. Which means that this, if you think about partons which build the string, these guys are actually free particles which move by straight light. I mean, that's the image. But the thing is that we did not take here the fluctuation. So you have to take into account the next term will be just, you know, these vertices will fluctuate, and you need to know what will happen with that. So the question is, this is a nice property. I want to say that the fact that the initial string is tensionless is good. I will consider it good because you have the chance. It's not a proof, but it has the chance that if you scatter on this type of string, you will hit points which are just free particles. So you will have just scattering as usual in field theory, like some power behavior or whatever. Of course, I cannot prove it at the moment, but I will say that it's physically is very possible. Now, the question which we want to address is the following. We have the initial action, which is this, which measures the which is tensionless. So the question is that if we take into account the fluctuation of the surface, might be that it will generate the tension as a secondary effect. So can it happen that we will have string tension which is induced as a quantum effect? And not as in initial theory. I want to avoid, that's what idea is, to avoid the...
Sort of like in yesterday's talk, where fluctuations generated a spring constant.
yeah, that's sort of... and actually, if you think about that, it's very natural that then the guys started to fluctuate on the surface. They sort of touched the whole surface, and then the amplitude is sort of proportional to the area. Therefore, the area term should be generated. Now, almost in old days, 10 years ago, I did this computation in a discrete version because I don't know the continuous formulation at that days. And it's very complicated with this making an estimate and so on. So final result was written here, which is, you see the quantum string tension was equal to D over A square. A square is the length scale like in lattice theory. And you see that the string tension was scaling. But the computation was very complicated, very unclear. Even to my collaborator, I was unable to prove the result. Constantine, yeah, was always complaining that there is something wrong here.
What's beta in those equations?
Sorry?
Beta?
Oh, beta is a you write the function, you write like this, beta times your action. I mean, you write the z of beta, which is equal to sum over all triangulations, e times minus beta times your action. Yeah. Not area, but this length action. Yeah. This length functional.
Is it temperature?
It's a temp. Yeah, it's coupling constant or temperature, yes. Well, it's statistical model here. But now, having the continuous version of the model, one can do really just perturbation. So it's the same things which I already just done, repeating the statement. This is a definition of the second fundamental form. You just take two derivatives and you expand it into the tangential and the normal component, so you will get this k. Now, I will follow the procedure which Polyakov used in the case when the action is this one, when you don't have the root of the curvature. As you see, the rho remain here. If you take the conformal gauge, in Polyakov case, there is a rho minus 1. So there is explicit dependence on the scale factor. But here, as you see, just become the second derivative in square, under the square. And this is actually nice because if you erase this, it's just a second derivative. So it looks like very, very close to just a free theory, but it is not yet. It's not completely. It's very tiny modification of the area action somehow or what. Now this term is the Lagrange multiplier, and the rho is the scale factor. So what we want to do, first of all, you write the classical equation when you introduce this lambda. So you have three equations, one when you variate the x, another when you variate the lambda, and another when you variate the rho. So this equation says that it should be traceless on the classical trajectory. And this term is actually exactly somehow remind you the equation for a point-like particle. Now you have to write the path integral. As usually you have this, because you fix the conformal gauge, you have to write the Fadeev-Popov-Ghosts, these determinants. And then what we will do, we will expand near some flat solution, it does not matter, some solution. And this x1, lambda1, and rho1 are the fluctuation around the background configuration. Then you will have the classical action, which is written here, and then the term, which is quadratic in fluctuation. So this is quadratic in x1, this is lambda1, x1. See here, lambda1, rho1. here also x1, x1, and then this is the this is just a right to explain that there is more term coming out of in this expansion. So we will concentrate on the terms which are quadratic. One interesting thing is that you see here there is some operator appear, projector. And what we will do, we will expand our fluctuation of X field into the normal components to the surface and to the tangential. So phi alpha define the tangential modes and psi are the normal modes. So you can imagine that psi are d minus one components here, and here is two components, and with some properties which says that who are normal to whom and the normalization and so on. Before going further, let me show you some details. I realize that I have to explain here some. It's the same what I was already telling you. This is expansion of the fluctuation into the tangential and normal components. And if we substitute it into the action, in the light cone coordinates, we will get this expression. Now, if we integrate over rho 1 and lambda 1 plus minus, plus plus and minus minus, this term, and this term, we will get the delta function, which is lambda 1 plus minus, and then delta function of this, which phi is, as you remember, longitudinal mode. And then if we integrate over lambda 1 plus minus and 5 plus minus, we get from here the determinants of delta plus and delta minus with minus 1 power. So what you will see that in one loop approximation, this longitudinal mode will cancel with the Fadeev-Popov determinant, and they just disappear. This is effect actually which was also mentioned by Polyakov. Actually, the algebra is the same.
Is this related to the residual freedom you have after going to conformal gauge?
Actually, yes. This you will see that there is some unusual property that I mentioned here. There is actually here you will see that because of this projector, the physical degrees are d minus 3 and not d minus 2. There is some also perturbation normal to the surface, which actually does not is the invariance because of this projector. Yeah.
Isn't there this inflation?
So actually I did not, I mean algebraically I understood it. Geometrically also in some way I can write you a couple of formulas which says that I mean you have MI, the normals. If you put here KAA, as you see I built some. This is a linear combination of the normals with this type of coefficient. That's again a normal, which is called n, which I will call n mu. So there is an invariance under the translation in that direction. So I don't understand completely this, I will say. But this is a fact that you see this this n hat have this the translation in that direction is zero mode of the action. So therefore, finally, what I want to say is that you see here is the quadratic form in psi with this projector plus the interaction term which describe the interaction of this normal modes with the with a background field lambda. Yes?
What is your theorem? You showed us that your action is invariant under inflation. It's all independent. The theorem is zero mode. Isn't it this animal?
No, no. The fact that it is a conformal invariant just means that you have d minus 2 degrees of freedom, whatever I will say.
Reparametrization.
Yes, reparametrization, yes.
But you were talking all the time in terms of changing the scale of the surface.
The theory is invariant under the, you know, local, like in normal string theory. It is absolutely the same. On classical level, the theory is absolutely row independent. But what happens in normal string theory that if you quantize the theory, there is anomalies, and that's produce the critical dimension. Here, as you see, at one loop, my statement is that the contribution, you know, the if you started to quantize the theory, the contribution coming from Xi will be proportional to the dimension of spacetime. From the Ghost will be minus 26. So only when d minus 26 is equal to 0, you don't have conformal anomaly and the theory that we knew, the critical string. Now here in this theory, as you see, the Ghosts, the contribution from the Ghost and from the Xi, from longitudinal, they cancel each other. So somehow at one loop level, as you see, there is no dependence on the dimension of space-time. And I will see, we will see it actually in more a direct way a little bit later.
But I still have a question. Just yes. Like in instanton calculations, if you have some kind of invariance, you must have a number of zero morphs related to this invariance. For example,
that's a Ghost.
Just classical instanton, for example, does depend on rho, but your action does not depend on rho.
It's look,
the price you pay that you have a zero mod, which is related to to this phenomena. So you must have something which is related to your independence on rho.
So there is essential difference in here, because if you take the instanton zero mode, they are physical zero modes. It's connected with the translation of the instanton. We are talking about gauge modes when you have a gauge theory, so you introduce Fadeev-Popov determinant, which is connected with the zero modes that you have, you know, only transfer degrees of freedom are physical. So that's counted by the Fadeev-Popov determinant.
I guess the question is whether cancellation is exact, whether there are
no, it is on one loop. I don't know how it happens in the two loops.
The determinants over the non-zero modes cancel, but can there be a zero mode piece there?
Which
well?
You don't take into account here. Zero mode piece from your determinant.
Those operators and for their papa, then there should be zero modes.
Yeah, this is a local calculation, you know. You're not looking at the global, isn't it?
No.
But there was one zero mode, right, which was reducing d minus 2 to d minus 3 degrees of freedom.
D minus 3?
Well, yeah, you said that because of that.
That's true. That's I take into
some zero mode.
Yeah.
And what is the meaning of that zero mode?
That's what we're discussing. Yeah.
Maybe this is the same.
No, actually,
somehow you must introduce collective variable somewhere related to the independence.
Look, the thing is that here this projector will be taken into account, you know. The thing is that not d minus 2 degrees of freedom with propagate, but only d minus 3. That's what I am saying. Here I did calculation in covariant way. Now the second part of my talk will be then I will specifically to check all these things. We did also calculation in the physical gauge where we just take the physical degrees of freedom and we treat them and the result actually is the same. That's what I can say on that. So in any case, let me continue and to write the Feynman rule. So we have this the propagator for the Xi, which contains here this projector, and it's like in abelian case there is no determinant, we connect it with that. And we have the vertex operator where the xi is interacting with the lambda, which is written here. And then we have one loop diagram plus with just one lambda leg and with many. So my aim to compute these diagrams to see how the theory is built. So here is the propagator. As you see, here is this projector which take out one mode which I was talking here. So the trace is d minus 3, and then the action is equal to the classical action plus the one loop, which is written here. It's easy to substitute here, as in the case of Polyakov, but the number of diagrams, and there is no diagrams which is connected with a row and so on. So you will get this type of result, which is written here. So it's renormalized the mass parameter here in this way. But as I told you, that the classical on classical trajectory, the trace of the lambda is equal to zero. Therefore, actually, one loop contribution is equal to zero. Therefore, there is no renormalization of the mass in the one loop approximation. And it is very similar to the effect which was observed for four-dimensional gravity. When you compute the one loop contribution, you see that the counter term is proportional to the R mu nu. So on classical trajectory, on mass shell, it is just equal to zero. So the same effect is here. Now, another thing which we want to compute is to compute the sum of all one loop diagrams which have many lambda legs. So you see that it is normally it's trace of logarithm of some operator, where here is this background field. It's like in Coleman-Weber calculation or in Young-Mill theory, similar also. And the idea is to look for the solution for lambda in this form, where lambda is a constant field. Now, the result, if you use the proper time method or whatever any of available, you will get this type of result. So it is here you have d minus 3. You have integration over ds. Now, if you expand in s this exponent, you will see that the first diagram is logarithmically divergent, as it was we have seen before. And then the other terms, which are ultraviolet, the ultraviolet divergences are in this boundary, and infrared are at infinity. So all these diagrams after the with two lambdas or three and more, they are ultraviolet finite but infrared divergent, like in lambda phi, exactly as in Coleman-Weinberg. So what we have to do, we have to do the same trick such that we normalize. We should take the counter term such that it will be self, because all the sum is exponent. Therefore, the field itself produce the infrared cutoff. So if you do these things as properly, then the Lagrangian which comes out, the potential which comes out is written here. And this lambda log of lambda produce this the condensate of Lagrange multiplier. And therefore, if it's induced, I substitute here, but you have to substitute in the Lagrangian where we have just only this fluctuations. If you substitute it and then you return back, you will see that the term, which is the usual area term generated here with a string tension which is proportional to m squared with some exponent which depends on d. So therefore, I will say that the conclusion that that fluctuation will generate the area term, and therefore sort of confinement in the theory, is a possibility in this theory. Now, to check these calculations in a different setup, we did the following. You take the surface in the Gaussian coordinates, which means that you take the x mu as sort of background, and then you consider the perturbation of the x only in the normal direction, which means that xi r is just the normal. Then one can compute the perturbation of the derivative, the perturbation of the induced metric, which is written here, then the perturbation of the inverse metric, the perturbation of the determinant, the complicated expressions written here. Then, actually, to get the perturbation of extrinsic curvature at the second order, you have to find actually the perturbation of the normal in the same order. That also can be done. The expression is written here. And then finally, the total variation of the extrinsic curvature is due to the variation of the second derivative, written here, and of the normal. And if you substitute all these expressions back to here, then one can get this expression, which is written here. This is a variation of the second fundamental form. Then you have to you multiply by to take a trace. That's also you should take into account the perturbation of the induced metric. If you multiply all these terms, the expression become even larger, but still. You can treat it. So what is written here is the first term, which is linear in Xi, is actually giving you the equation of motion, which is written here. And as you see, it's not simply just RAB equal to zero. It's a little bit more complicated than that. So this is the expression. This is the equation. Which one? It's a two words polygon. It's angle and edra is the space. So which means that it comes from the fact that the as you remember in the discrete version to compute the action you multiply the length of the. Lij. You take the length of the edge and you multiply by the deficit angle. So it was very strange to me at 93. Then we got this discrete version. Actually, it's this type of geometry was considered by the geometer of last century, which is his name is Jakob Steiner. So he was the man who invented this type of functional. And as you see, unusual property was to me that you multiply length by the angles. It was sort of so shocking that sort of this type of name took on mind that you it's sort of length multiplied by the angle. So it's angle and faces. So that's the name comes out. But actually, little bit later, I immediately realized that in it was much more in 68, Regge discretizing the gravity. He just write that this integral is just equal to sum over you can say delta I j k times omega I j k, the sum over. So this is the area of the phase I j k, and this is the angle, actually deficit angle, which is on that phase. So this way, your action, the Einstein action, is actually measuring the area. If you sum just the areas of these walls, will be wrong. But if you multiply the area of the wall always by the deficit angle on the wall, and you sum over all the universe, you will get correct things. Because I can put here artificial wall, and it will, you know, the area, more wall I will put, more area will be increased, but it's not. So only in the case when on the given wall there is a deficit angle, it will contribute into the Einstein action. So here is also the same. If I put artificial lines here, all they will be killed by the pi minus alpha, this deficit angle. But this line is not artificial, so there is an angle here, so it will contribute. Yes. So therefore, if I will compute this for these glasses, it will be sort of, you measure the beer, as I say, in its cubic centimeters or in cubic or square centimeters. But there is another invariant way to make it in centimeters. So you can say, you know, I have 10 centimeters of beer. So this that's a correct statement.
So I'm a little confused. What's the difference between this equation of motion and the one we derived earlier, which was just the Ricci tensor?
I write wrong equation. You know, I don't want to write. No. The equation is much more complicated. It is written here. As you see, if I sum over ij here, it's indeed the r. But the equation is a little bit more complicated than just Rij equal to zero. So I am sorry to say, I just write you to give a flavor that it has sort of curvature. Yes. It's sort of curvature of the circle. But it's much more complicated a little bit than but in d equal to 3, it is exactly the Gaussian curvature equal to zero. If you go a little bit up, then situation become a little bit more complicated. So you have this linear term, which give you equation of motion, and the second term, which give you, actually, this is a propagator. As you see again, this projector up here, this one. And then you have five terms, which are quadratic in Xi, and actually can be computed. So you have this propagator, which again have this pi ij. And then you have five diagrams, which you have to compute. So the contribution of the first one, all of them. So now, here, I can explain now, at least we ourselves understand what happens. As you see here is 2 times d minus 3, and here is minus 2 times d minus 3. Therefore, these two terms, which actually depends on space-time, dimension of the space-time, they just cancel each other. And the reason is a root. Because of the root, there is some additional 1/2 or whatever, therefore they cancel each other. And as I will show you, when you make it with Polyakov, there is no, here is actually 1/2. So there is a d minus 2d, which gives you minus d. So negative asymptotically free beta function, which is proportional to the d. So here, because of the root, this tiny cancellation happens. And then these two terms cancel each other. Therefore, we really don't have the contribution into the
one loop, presumably.
You know, I don't know the second loop, so I'm sorry. I cannot talk about.
There's no reason, nothing to protect it, right?
I don't know. There is some reasons. Maybe I will talk later. So and then the rest of the terms are vanishing because of this statement. The only term which remained is this one, and it is proportional to the curvature, which is just an Euler characteristic, which can be just neglected. So we see that in this in this calculation also the one loop diagrams are finite. Now to introduce the effective Lagrangian, you have to introduce the sources and do these things. And I think that I will believe that the result will be the same. Now the last transparencies which I want to show you is the just this computation, the same for the Polyakov function. The calculation will be absolutely the same. The only difference will be that I should not take square root of the square of the extrinsic curvature. Then we have here 1, 2, 3, 4 terms, and as you see, they cancel each other. They don't cancel each other. There is 1/2 2d - 2d, which produce the d, and therefore this type of renormalization of the coupling constant, which you well know from his work, and in our case it was that what happens here, that they just cancel each other at one loop. So in conclusion, I want to say that we have the theory which is initially is built by the length, and therefore there I will insist that I don't want to put from the beginning the area term, because that's immediately produce all, I will say, the problems which we have before, not having, I mean, you hit the end of the string and it started to vibrate in all higher modes, so it is always soft. So what you need to have something tensionless string, such that then you hit it, you really hit the point object. So in here, I will say that in classical approximation, you will probably have, because there is no computation yet on that, but I will expect that it is nice property that at the beginning there is no string tension, and then quantum mechanically string tension is generated, so, and it is sort of infrared effect, as we see the diagrams are this infrared divergence which produce this effect of the condensation of the multiplier and therefore the creation of the area term. So might be that this will go further. And the only things which I want to add that there is one more article I write on that subject, the last one which I did not include here, is that I consider more in details the question you address, that who are independent, who are X, who are J's, what is induced metric. I compute the specifically energy momentum tensor. You can see that it is traceless, therefore the theory indeed is conformal invariant. And that also means that there is infinite amount of conservation laws. You can actually solve completely the equations, are b-harmonic functions or whatever specially factorized. And I think that it's also possible, I already did, to quantize it in a normal canonical way. That was very surprising to me. It's because it's have non-linearities. So therefore not obvious that you will have. So in the beginning what I did, I compute the tensor, energy momentum tensor, and because the theory is reparametrization invariant, it should form the Virasoro algebra. So now if you insist that your operators energy momentum tensor is actually representation of Virasoro algebra, then you have some canonical relations to the momentum and the coordinates, which are absolutely normal, nothing wrong with that. and then to proceed to solve them. So that's sort of in more standard procedure was used. Before, this was just in some background. So thank you very much.
Do we have more questions?
I haven't understood, I guess, what's going to protect the term from being ultraviolet important. You know, once you generate the area term, then it's going to, next loop, produce back again ultraviolet sensitivity, isn't it? Just like in the Polyakov calculation. So what's protecting it? What's keeping it small? Or you have a different idea?
Well, this turns out to be completely infrared. I mean, something is protecting it.
Okay, but.
Yeah, the
do you see a reason why it should be?
I mean, is this a terminal energy effective action where it's not?
You say you should not do that.
It's terminal energy, that's all that.
It is not allowed, not as long as it is.
So you shouldn't use it to compute quantum variables.
Actually, trying to answer to this question, I understand that one should develop really the whole. You know, this is sort of the fast understanding what is going on. But I think that to answer really tough questions, one should do this really to treat this theory as it should be, and which is not obvious because it's as you see the. Actually, the action is looks like this. So, you can realize that this can be written also as p mu d squared x mu times d2 xi, where the p mu is equal to d mu x mu divided by a root. So, and then you see that these guys are actually canonically conjugate variables, and you have d squared here. So there is a chance to sort of to treat this theory more or less rigorously, and that happens that it is indeed possible. So. The quantization is goes. I mean, that's the only good message which I can tell you, that you can quantize and make oscillator expansion. The equation, the equation of motion looks like this. It's d square of x mu divided by this guy is equal to zero. So now, if you don't have this guy here, that will be so-called b-harmonic functions. I mean, you have harmonic function, you have b-harmonic function, which is completely solvable. But then you see that here is M actually. The M is here. So P mu, there is a constraint which is P mu square is equal to M square. As you see, like for point particle, P square is equal to M square. There is some additional constraint in this on this model. And there is a lot of details. I mean, for example, there is no factorization. Because of this, there is no factorization of left and right movers for enclosed strings and so on. There is some similarities and some tiny differences with the standard theory.
As the local experts here, how come a term like this is not generated from the other approach?
The thing is that I have the idea, general idea, which is hierarchy. So. I will explain what is
about what are allowed operators and what.
Yeah, so sort of you have the topological operators, you have linear and area and so on. So I will say that this is a square root. This theory, I will say that it is square root of the area, yeah, so of the area action.
Is it a relevant operator in the infrared? Is that the claim, basically?
Well, it's actually not relevant. I would say it's relevant.
Relevant.
It's relevant. Relevant. Mass, right? I mean,
yeah.
And the right. Next one is marginal. The term which he calculated, because it has dimension less coupling constant in front.
So how come you don't generate in the polycoupler first this term?
Oh, he generated.
He generated?
Yes, it? Yes, also. If you take the area, it just renormalized the, he take area term plus this term. It's not just only this term. He take the area term plus the extrinsic curvature, then making perturbation, you need, he need the area term. And that just renormalized the string tension. That's what happens in this, in his case.
So you don't have extension of this stuff. Could you flash that transparency? I didn't catch it. What it is made of? What are the letters which I know? What intention? Mm-hmm. What is the coefficient in front?
N squared. You will think that you will
write. The term I can write to you. The string tension, you mean what it is, the quantum mechanical. It is m squared times e minus 4 pi over d minus 3.
Okay. So there is no h bar here.
That's so true, isn't it?
Yeah. Or even without bar. Yeah. So it's a big thing. I mean, it's not a perturbation.
It's not expansion. It is not classical expansion. It's nothing.
It's right. I mean, it's a large D expansion, maybe. Right?
Yeah.
If you put a large D limit, maybe.
Large what?
Large D.
If the h bar is 1 over d.
No, classical action in this case is 0.
Or small
it would be d close to 0.
D minus 3.
Small
d minus h bar is d minus 3.
Yeah, d minus 3 is b. It's small.
Yeah.
Pi is large. Maybe the black hole.
I get confused something here. Like, I mean, normally actions with square roots don't make sense. You don't get propagated. I mean, something magical happens that you could even calculate, or is there some general trick? If I just take a square root of partial phi to partial phi, I can't do a definite.
Yes.
Yes, I can.
If
I just took a square root of the Klein-Gordon action, I wouldn't know what to do.
I will say that it's very close to Born-Infeld. If you take Born-Infeld, let's say electromagnetism interacting with a scalar, you write it, let's say you compactify QED. To four dimension, then you have.
Well, there's two things. One is a one in the square root, so I can make an expansion. One in the square root of one plus something.
Yes.
So I can make an expansion. And two, it's non-normalizable. I can't calculate loops.
Yes. What happened?
I mean, you didn't seem to run into any divergences besides that.
I can show you the expansion, but I think that it was. I mean, the.
You're expanding about a configuration where the square root's non-zero.
Yeah. You see, yes, that's true, and it is easy to build.
So
just take the cylinder, just straight cylinder, right?
Good.
So that's perfectly perfect.
That's like your one.
When you
it's your one, yes.
That's one, but then there's the other half. Isn't it going to be non-normalizable? Because as you expand on the square root, you get more and more derivatives, or something to protect you from that too.
I will say that that's why I make an analogy with gravity. It looks like a gravity. It is a what I have seen at the moment is just one loop renormalizable.
Okay.
So what happens in the second loop? I don't know. Maybe it has many terms like in expansion in gravity, and that's what only I which is expected will be. I mean, it's yeah. I don't know, maybe here, for the reason of some two dimensions and so on, might be there is some, this phenomena can go further, but I don't know. And the theory is conformal invariant also, that's somehow might be the reason for
what that means, because you introduce, you turn some x's into a g at some place in the middle. I mean, it's not really clear what that means, because you had to sort of take this expression built out of only x's and replace some of the partial x's with g's. I mean, it didn't.
Yes, that's true. So your question is the following: that if you work just as it is, so it will be.
The g's are built out of the x's, still, when you calculate.
Yes. So what I have to do is that. That was the part which is not here, is the next article. But the thing is that I will consider this as a function of g and x. I will just declare that I will consider g and x as independent variables. So I will have the functional which is.
And does the equation of motion for g somehow, as we.
Yeah, so if you resolve it, it becomes equivalent to the initial theory. That's the thing. So then I will go through.
If you formulated this in the discrete way, which you mentioned earlier in the talk, so sort of by triangulating your surface, are there any obstacles to taking the continuum limit?
No, exactly not at all, because it's just exactly what it is. The continuum limit is different. One is the if you take smashes more and more small,
yeah.
So you will recover like in Regge calculus.
But in the case with the area laws, you were saying, I'm wondering whether you could, in principle, you know, solve all your problems by just doing a sort of the analog of lattice gauge theory. Just give it to a big computer and see what you get out.
That was done. It's generate nice surfaces and so on. We also find.
So you don't get the sort of growing of spikes problem.
No.
That you were talking
about before. No, because it's suppressed by the length, and we mathematically prove it. So I will explain you how it happens. So together with some mathematician, we prove the following.
No problems of principle with just calculating the path integral for this theory numerically.
We proved with mathematician from Freiburg that the path integral, I mean, discretized, if you integrate over the vertices, is actually have the non-zero radius of convergence. Using inequality, which is saying that the action actually is bigger or equal 4 pi delta, where delta is the mean radius of the surface, which means that you took 2 points in the surface, and you move them, and you always measure the distance between those 2 points. So there is some 2 positions where the distance between them is maximal. That's the diameter of the circle. So this guy, this functional, is always bigger than 2 pi delta.
So you can take a continuum limit where the mesh gets very fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so suppose that I will take the surface, right? And I take this thing. So as you see, this angle will go to pi.
Yeah.
And the length will go to, the sum of the lengths will go to infinity. So they exactly cancel each other. So one will be s1 over n, another s1 over n, and then you will got here just 4 pi, the radius of the sphere. That's actually Steiner discretization. Now another Minkowski proved that S is bigger. No. This functional A S is A square is more or equal 4 pi S. And this is equal to each other only for sphere, which means that instanton is.
Which Minkowski we want to know? The
Minkowski, the
Minkowski or the living Minkowski?
No, Minkowski. he was a.
Herman and not Peter.
Yes, not a Peter. No. So he's
mentioned that some mathematician, you prove this theorem with some mathematician.
Yes. He's from that school of Minkowski and Steiner school.
Do mathematicians agree to work with path integral?
Actually, that's, yeah, these mathematicians works in
this path integral in this case.
They're doing the triangulation of the
dynamical triangulations measure, like,
yes,
it's David and that approach.
Yeah, we actually I will give the this inequality was proven with mathematician, which actually means that if you have minus a, right, it will be bigger or equal e times minus 4 pi delta, and that's actually
smaller,
right? So it's bounds from above, yes, and that's produce the possibility to estimate the integral,
and of course that doesn't help you unless the measure doesn't overcome that bound.
Yeah, the measure you can write in terms of delta. No. Yeah. You can write the measure in terms of delta, and that's helped. Okay. That's the trick, actually. The measure is much more easily treatable in terms of delta rather than in terms of in terms of A. So that's why you can estimate. And another, this is what I say, the inequality which was proven, that the ancient problem of isoperimetry. If you have the perimeter here L and the area S, then L square is more than 4 pi S, and the equality is for the circle. So the same is here, with difference that it is the sphere which saturate this inequality, which means that actually the instanton is circular sphere.
It's also the independent.